I like the Art Bell buildup because so
everybody likes the Art Bell buildup. The Art Bell sound, you know. What did he say? From the Kingdom of Nye.
Nye, yeah.
Right. Pahrump, Nevada.
I used to always love Art Bell because someone would call in and say, I'm a werewolf. And, yes. he would go, oh my.
Interesting. Tell
yeah.
me more.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't care. He never called you out on it. He just let you ramble. He had time traveler lines.
Loved that.
Let people.
Loved it. I never learned anything from it, though.
So you're obsessed with UFOs, right? Is that safe to say?
It's safe to say, but it's not so much just the UFO itself. I mean, I don't call them that anymore. We call these advanced aerial threats. They're different, but
threats.
You honed in on a word we weren't supposed to really get into here in the first part of the show.
Did you have a plan?
I have a very long plan, detailed plan. We're going to start with my body. We're just going to talk about my body for a lot.
And, okay, what do you want to talk about when it comes to your body?
Well, my body is interesting. It's unique.
Okay.
And it changes shape. What I've noticed is it's just changing.
Yeah, it's getting larger.
Larger,
maybe?
Getting wider.
Depending upon what you put in it.
But you're all, can I cuss?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We're on the internet.
You're so fucking fit. You shook my hand. I think you're going to break my hand.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, just don't be strong.
I didn't mean to.
Don't be so handsome.
Just shaking
and
your hand. Just thought it was a handshake.
I know. Well, it's one of those power moves. You ever see when Trump shakes people's hands and he pulls them in and he's
oh,
like.
Oh, yeah, he does do weird shit.
He does
right?
weird shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mean to do that. Just meant to shake your hand like a man.
Well, I took it as like. Know your place, motherfucker.
Oh,
this is my
weird.
Show.
I didn't think that.
No, I'm just joking.
Interesting. So, when did you get obsessed with this aerial threat thing? And why do you call them threats?
We'll get into that, I guess.
Okay.
I got into it when I was in junior high. But for some weird reason, I had like some time off and I went to the school library in like seventh grade, and I was like, "Damn, I'm gonna read some boring shit. What am I gonna read?" And I saw this one book. And it had a picture of the Loch Ness Monster in like a UFO. I'm all, that looks cool. And I read that and I was like, holy cow, these are like real. It wasn't all science fiction. I mean, the way the book was laid out, I was like, these are like real events. I'm all, there's no way, really? And then when the band started doing its thing in the back of the van, there were no like smartphones. So we were buying books. And I would just lay there. We'd have like 20-hour drives. And so I started buying books on the UFO phenomenon. And I was... Once you do that, it's a black hole. You're done.
Yeah, it's definitely a rabbit hole. You get sucked into it. I at my house, I have a framed poster that's the cover of the Roswell Daily News.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
shows the day after the Roswell crash, where it says that the Air Force came and recovered the wreckage, and you know the whole deal. I've been obsessed with this shit since I was a little kid.
Yeah, I think that's by design. I think that this generation is. Was meant to have this stuff come out, but you know I can't prove that. That's just my feeling.
What makes you feel that? Like,
because of exactly what you said. There's a lot of people. I don't believe that some of the events happened on accident. You know, I think that there's been a lot of events that are on purpose. Some have been for show. Some have been for. There's a variety of reasons, but I think a lot of it is. A control system that's really pushing humanity in a very specific direction. And
so like they've got a time frame where they've had these events take place. Is that what you think?
Yeah. And they also time travel, which is different than what people think in like a movie where they sit in a machine and you know, all of a sudden you're in the 1930s and you got to go save humanity. When you use the technology, you have there's a time difference between what they're doing inside of an artificially created bubble of gravity of sorts, and then what's on the outside. So if you're on the inside of one of those machines, everything would be skewed more black and white. There'd be like a red shift, and everybody would look frozen. So you literally could fly around and grab a Coke out of someone's hand and put it in someone else's hand. It's really...
Where are you getting this from?
Well, take a wild guess. Look at the people I'm surrounded by, you know.
So the people you're surrounded by are telling you this? Is that what it is?
I don't want to get into that. But the people I'm surrounded with and myself, you know, are very close to this stuff. But the physics, you know, the physicist that's a co-founder of my company, To the Star, he's a Nobel nominee. He wrote the book on plasma physics.
What's his name?
Hal Puthoff, Dr. Hal Puthoff. And he created remote viewing. Do you know what remote viewing is?
Yeah.
He's the creator of the CIA psychic spy program, but he also has done like really exotic, advanced forefront propulsion work for the past decades and decades, actually. I mean, he's deep into the, like, quantum this and that. So he's the one that actually told me about the redshift. Yeah.
And so they have experienced this physically, or is this just theoretical, or they know that it exists? Like
the technology?
Yes.
I believe that the technology not only exists, we've figured out how to play with it, but I'm not going to really get into that here. That is what we're doing at my company, though. That is the announcement. So Steve Justice was head of advanced programs at the Skunk Works, and the Skunk Works are who built, you know, the famous secret bases you hear about. Skunk Works did, you know, the U-2 spy plane, the SR-71 Blackbird, the F-117 stealth fighter. And
it's all Groom Lake out there,
all
right?
That kind of stuff. And he literally was in charge of all the advanced programs. So, you know, you got the boss and you got him. Mm-hmm. And he came, he just finished his career over there within the past 2 months, I think it is. And he was on stage with me when we came out and said, we're going to be building one of these things.
So when you say that all this technology exists, have they explained this to you, or have you seen it physically?
Oh, I haven't seen anything physically like that. I wouldn't be allowed to go anywhere if that does or doesn't exist.
So they've just explained to you that this exists. And that this is in the hands of the U.S. government?
I think, no. I don't want to get into that kind of stuff. But if you don't mind.
But why is it that you want to not get into certain things?
Well, I don't want to I represent more than myself these days.
Right.
So I definitely have to watch what I say.
Well, who do you represent when you say you represent more than yourself?
The team that I'm with. So when you look at the people that are a part of my company, it's Undersecretary of Defenses and Defense and Senior Intelligence Service.
Is there a list of these people like that we could see?
Yeah. I thought you guys would have had that.
Yeah, so, but I mean, is there like a list where folks could see it online?
Yeah. They can go to thestarsacademy.com and scroll down, and you'll be able to see who they all are. So
how did you get linked up with all these people?
That story might be a better way to start, because a lot of people don't know this part of the story, and I think you're going to find it pretty fucking odd as well. But okay, so we'll back up a couple years. So I was obviously, you know, I started the band Blink, and Blink went places, but we always had a weird band relationship, like most bands, and we also thought that we would never be big, so we started companies on the side, and I had a company that incubated a lot of small startups, like software and apparel and hardcore skate surf companies and stuff like that. Well, I learned a lot from that, and I pulled out an entertainment startup called To The Stars. And I knew I was going to be doing kind of like science fiction franchised stories, just like Disney, but science fiction for adults. And what that means is, you know, I make a story, I title it, I brand it, and I put out the book, and I put out the merchandise, and I go make a movie, you know, and it's a vertically integrated kind of model. Well, one of the stories I knew I wanted to put out was Secret Machines, which was kind of a historical fiction but based on real events about the UFO phenomenon. But I also knew that I knew shit that most people don't know, because I've studied it for so long, and I happen to put some pieces together that most people don't put together. So before I came out with that book, and before I came out with the plan to take that, make major motion pictures and all that kind of stuff, I knew I needed to ask permission. So I flew around to places. I can't say who they were, but and they listened to my pitch, and then I got a email out of nowhere that says, meet us next to the Pentagon at this day and time. And I did that. And from that,
you got an email from just a random person?
No. I just can't tell you who it's from.
Okay.
And so then I go out.
Meet you next to the Pentagon? So you just flew to the Pentagon?
I flew out to Pentagon City. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, dude, this gets...
Were you freaking out?
I'll tell you when I started freaking out. There's more shit. It gets way worse. This is nothing. So that started me out in out near D.C. taking some other high-level meetings. And there was somebody at a very high level that closed the door, looked me in the eye, and says, okay, I'm going to introduce you to somebody. And that person comes to San Diego, puts me on the phone with a general. And the general is listening to my little stump speech about what I want to do with this franchise, because it was I definitely didn't want to, you know, I wasn't looking to like force disclosure, and I wasn't looking to be rogue and break secrets. I was like, look, I know what's going on here, and you guys are doing a kick-ass job, and I would have done the exact same thing should I have been the guy at the top that had to make some really hardcore decisions 70 years ago. So I want to support you. I think people are cynical because there's a vacuum. You guys can't say what you're doing. So all these people are just coming up with a bunch of bullshit to say, oh, you know, they don't want us to know, or we can't handle it, or it's all about oil and money and all this weird shit.
You had put these pieces together independently.
I did.
And so based on books that you read?
Yeah, people think that like places like the CIA and the DIA, all these intelligence organizations have, you know, a monopoly on information. They don't. They get their information from the real world too. You know, they do have access to you know, archives of information. They do have access to some amazing, you know, satellite data and stuff like that. But if you're smart and you take your time, you know where to look and you find patterns, you can pretty much put together all the same shit they can, kind of, you know. And that's what I did. And so when I pitched what I wanted to do, he said, come up and meet me tomorrow. And so I flew up to NASA, actually, NASA Ames, and had a 2-hour meeting there. And after 2 hours, that person says, he looks me in the eyes, I'm going to introduce you to someone else. And he did. And so I got on the phone with this person, and this person, you know, I'm a skeptic. And then at the end of the conversation, he goes, fly out and see me. And so I did. And that's when things really started happening. So I fly out to this airport, and I sit at a table in a restaurant at the airport. No one's in there. And this gentleman sits down, and the waiter comes up. He waves off the waiter, and he looks me in the eye and says, it was the Cold War, and we found a life form. And that's when I started shitting my pants, because I know a lot about this stuff, but you always wait to talk to somebody that is one of the inside people. You always want to
have... So he sits down at a restaurant with you at the airport and tells you that they found a life form.
Yes. And
during the Cold War?
During the Cold War, and everything that they did... And every decision they made at the time was because of the consciousness of the Cold War.
And why has this guy decided to meet with you at an airport?
Because the only way you meet with these people, the only way you ever would have anyone talk to you is if you can provide a service that they need. Mm-hmm. And my service was pretty interesting to them, because I said, look, you guys, you know, you struggle with saying disclosure. You want to tell everybody everything, which I don't think everyone should know everything. And then you say, they can't handle it, so don't tell them anything. You know, and I'm like, there's a middle road there. And here's the way I would do the middle road. And it resonated with them, you know. And so we had a pretty epic conversation for two hours.
Why you? Like, why? What is it about what your message was?
Because
what your idea was that made them want to tell you some top secret shit that they've tried to keep away from the American people. Well, I mean, you take a guy who's like a big celebrity, who's in a huge rock band like you, and you just say, hey, meet me in an airport. I'm going to tell you about a life form that we found during the Cold War, because you're famous or because you know things?
No, because I have a service. So it's not – it sounds easy when you play it like that, but – A service. Like, what can you do for them that they need help with?
And what could you do?
Communication. They don't have a way to make a movie, a book. They don't know how. They don't have a way to make documentaries. They don't have a way to go on a big show like this and communicate with young people. They don't do that, and nor should they. You got to look at what they're doing.
So they look to you for a spokesperson role?
I wouldn't say spokesperson role.
Communication role?
A communication role. It makes more
sense. So they would give some information to you, and you would get it out to people. And now why wouldn't they do it themselves? Because they wouldn't have the same platform?
They don't have
access to the same platform
that
you would have?
And the other reason is people have tried to do movies and stuff like this, but none of them know. I was fortunate enough to know the core story, and most people don't.
So explain that then, if you don't mind going back. Like, sure. You said that you were able to put things together that other people weren't. What are those things?
Essentially, it's the book Secret Machines, where you have a lot of private finance, you have some world bankers, and you have a lot of people internationally working together to figure out a plan of how to push back against something that's been coming here for a very long time, but using off-the-books finances and using mechanisms that we're not totally aware exist. And what people have to realize is you know, the UFO phenomenon isn't a phenomenon. There's the universe is fucking gigantic, and there's life everywhere, every fucking where. And there's a lot of life that's way more advanced than we are. And just like Voyager left our solar system, a little dinky satellite from the 70s, and just like my company is going to be building, you know, this electromagnetic craft that really can do the same thing to time that I've been telling you about, other civilizations have that too, which means you can traverse those distances of space. And what you have to think about is what happened when we first discovered that, and what did we do about it? And there's no, you know, you got to look at 47 in a very peculiar way. 90 days after the Roswell event, the CIA was created, the Air Force was separated from the Army, the National Security Act was created. And all those things are mechanisms to start learning more and to start getting private industry off the ground.
So that had nothing to do with World War II. You think it had to do with aliens?
Oh, I absolutely think it. Well, both. Because what I believe crashed at Roswell was I believe it was German from Argentina, but it had hallmarks and technology based on alien technology. So we put out a story saying it's alien, and then we put out a story saying it's a weather balloon. But the real thing it was, we didn't want anyone to guess, and that's why we put those two things out there. And that's kind of how they do it. I think they did that with the moon. It's like, you know, we went to the moon, and then they put out this meme kind of thing. Like, we didn't go to the moon, but they didn't want people really going, well, what's on the moon? That, you know, so these things are managed until they can figure it out, because you got a bunch of normal dudes in suits sitting at a big table like this, and it's their fucking responsibility to figure this thing out. And this shit is monumentally big.
How have they managed this then? Regular dudes without access to communication like you have, how have they managed to disseminate this information and sort of confuse everybody?
I think, I don't know how they did it. I do know that they infiltrated UFO groups. That was the very first thing they did in the 50s.
Sort of like how FBI agents and undercover cops infiltrated Occupy Wall Street and pretended to be radical hippies and started fights.
Yep, they did that. They get access to what the civilians are learning, how information transfers from one group to another.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start deflecting all their knowledge and putting in leaks and this and that,
right,
and getting them off the main track, not because of disdain for citizens and not because of any other reason than picture ISIS. We don't know what ISIS is. They got a nuclear bomb, and we caught a guy trying to sneak in this bomb.
Right.
Are they going to stop and come sit on your couch and tell you all about it? No. And if you're like on the radio and there's all these people going, oh my God, we're going to die, a bomb. They're hold up a second. You know, you're not going to fucking die, but we need to learn more about this, and we got to figure it out before we sit down and talk to you about it.
So what was the connection, though, specifically that you had figured out, that they knew that you had figured out, that other people hadn't put together?
Well, let me go back to my story. So okay. I put out this book, and this book deals with...
What's the book called again?
Secret Machines. And it deals with international finance, private industry, a secret space program, and a bunch of other things.
And how'd you research this book?
What do you mean?
How'd you get the information?
Oh, it's just 25 years of reading shit and watching videos and studying physics and studying, you know, the secrecy acts and all that kind of weird shit. You know, you put it together, and a lot of it's bad information. But after a long time, I just realized what was going on. I studied enough of international finance, some mechanisms that happened after World War II, what the Nazis were doing technologically that no one really talks about to this day. They were 100 years ahead of us about what their guys did at the end of the war in South America. And the paperclip. Paperclip was like, there's two levels of paperclip. Paperclip is the operation that brought over all these ex-Nazis into NASA and into all of our aerospace programs. Why did we do that? Well, because they knew some shit that was very important. And we said there might be a bigger issue out there to deal with, so why don't we side with the devil or side with someone bad because there might be a devil out there. It's that kind of thinking. So they come in.
I thought it was about competing with Russia to try to advance rocketry.
I believe that there was, I believe that there's a reason why the Cold War never got hot is because we were working with Russia on this specific issue.
you think the reason why the Cold War never turned into an actual war, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So it had nothing to do with the fact that Russia was a communist empire and essentially we outspent them and they really went under and collapsed.
Yeah, but there's different levels. It's like when someone goes, you know, the U.S. government did this. Well, what do you mean? What does that mean? Does that mean the CIA did it or the DOD did it or Homeland Security did it? Mm-hmm. You're dealing with it's a $1 trillion organization. It's like if somebody in Apple leaks an iPhone, you know, are you going to say, oh, my God, Apple is doing – Apple's like, well, shit, we're a $800 billion company. We have so many things going on worldwide. It's impossible to say the entire organization believes one thing. And the government's the same kind of way. It's just like that's just a word. The U.S. government's two words, right? Three words? How do we want to count this?
Okay. United States government. Three. U.S. is
– You got a calculator? You know, I'm going to figure this shit out. But – and you have many, many layers of what's going on. And
of course,
you have some people worried on technology, some people worrying about what's happening to the civilian population. You have some people worrying about, you know, how to keep everything afloat, how to keep everything going. And you have a whole bunch of weird military excursions and they're bumping into each other. And all these people aren't read in to what's going on with the UFO thing. So as all that shit.
So who gets read in?
That's a good question. If I had to guess. Very, very senior technical brass.
And rock stars.
And I wasn't read in, trust me.
No? They didn't tell you anything?
No, they possibly did, but I wasn't read in. I wasn't brought into a skiff and they said, this is what's going on, even though I've been in a skiff a few times.
Okay.
You know what a skiff is?
A boat?
A skiff is a special compartmentalized information facility. It's where top secret shit can be discussed.
Oh, I thought maybe they talk on boats because nobody can hear you.
They
just
do that too.
In the middle of a rowboat.
They do that. They actually do because you can sweep for bugs on boats a lot easier than you can on a building.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they tell you what?
Okay. So I'm sitting at that restaurant and.
He says he found a life form. They found a life form during the Cold War.
Right. And I said,
where'd they find it?
Oh, I didn't ask him that question.
Really?
Many places. I did one time bring up, I said, you know, I'm thinking about talking about the crash in the late 40s. And they go, why just that one? That was the answer. So I had to figure out a language to talk to these guys.
Did you ever think maybe this guy's bullshitting you? Or he's a crazy person?
No. Fuck no.
No?
That's why you got to hear the whole story. Okay. So I'm sitting with them. We talk about a lot of things. I bring up the incidents with our nuclear weapons. I bring up the incidences, a few other things that I want to get into. And he goes, what do you need to do your project? What are you looking for? And I said, well, I need advisors. You know, I need people that are from different areas in the government because everyone has their own perspective. You know, you have people at the National Reconnaissance Office that have a perspective based on the satellite feeds they're getting, and these things are coming in and out of the atmosphere. Then you also have people from the agency that are worried about and collecting information of what's going on with people in different countries and here. But then you also have, you know, engineers that have a perspective on how the technology is made and what that might mean, because there's a lot of consciousness stuff that falls in this category.
Can I stop you right there? So there's satellites that track them coming in and out of the atmosphere?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
What kind of satellites are these?
I don't know. Usually forward-looking infrared, but I don't know what spectrum of the infrared they're looking at.
So there's some sort of a camera or some sort of a detection device that they have in the atmosphere just to check for UFOs?
I don't know if it's just for UFOs. They can pick up very, very specific heat signatures, and they have algorithms because what you have is a satellite is a device that can pick up what you program it to pick up. Now, you know, you put a sensor on there, but you got to tell the sensor what to do.
Right.
So if the sensor says, look, something traveling at this speed with this kind of heat, you know, you got to record that, you got to focus on it, and that's what we call an ICBM. But if something comes in and zigzags, stops, and turns left, and it's traveling 10 times faster than that, we need you to record that and focus in on that as well. But if something just is moving low and it's only going 300 miles an hour and it has these big wings and a low whatever, that's just a plane, you know. So what it captures is based on, you know, how it's programmed in the first place. But
so
yes,
it can differentiate between meteorites and
absolutely,
spaceships.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So
how often are these things coming into our atmosphere?
Oh shit, I don't know. But I've had quite a few discussions. One of the people I've been in contact. One of my advisors was from the National Reconnaissance Office, high up, high, high up. And they call it episodic visits. That's all I know.
Episodic, meaning episodic. Like they have time periods where they like...
There was, I saw a paper where they
semesters.
I figured out, the Department of Defense figured out a physicist there, an algorithm of how to compute when the things fly in and collect smaller ships, like motherships, small ships, what longitude and latitude and what essentially what orbit it would land at when it would collect these other machines. And so they tested that. And then all I know is it was successful. They
so were able you to think predict. This is happening on a very frequent basis?
Well, let me tell you the rest of the story. Okay. So and this is, it's important because you'll see. So he goes, what do you need? I said, I need advisors. And then, so next thing you know, I leave and 2 weeks later, bam, 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 my email starts. I have all these admirals, all these generals, no intelligence people other than brass that were connected with the National Reconnaissance Office. But National Reconnaissance Office is half Air Force and half CIA. But they're all military. And so I start talking to them. I start meeting with them. I fly out to Colorado Springs, and there's a general and a colonel, and they look at me and they said, okay, do you need anything else? Are you good? And I said, well, I think you guys should talk to the Defense Intelligence Agency. And they go, why? I just don't want to upset them. I want to make sure everyone's kosher with what I'm about to do. And the colonel looks at me and he goes, do you ask your dad for permission after your mom's already given it to you? And I go, no. And he's all, you've been given permission. Shut the fuck up and get to work. And I was like, all right. So I did. So I go out and I put the book out there and I start doing national radio, like the Art Bell, so Coast to Coast, mm-hmm. Georgia, where I do all that stuff. Next thing you know, I get approached by somebody at a certain agency. And that guy comes to San Diego and puts me in a small room. And I got what you would call interrogated for 2 days straight, saying, we need to know who the fuck you are. You know shit you shouldn't know. And
what specifically should you not have known?
The book, what's in the book, everything I've been telling you today, when you're dealing with there is a concerted international effort to deal with this stuff. And that was in my book. And that is, it's not like Roswell crashed, and it was not like, you know, like all the typical UFO shit that people dwell on isn't the story. It's just that something crashed, or someone got abducted and saw this, or someone pulled a little piece of metal out of their body. But no one's put together what we're doing about it, because our countrymen since World War II aren't stupid.
Set them off, though? Like, what was the thing that you said that you should not have known?
In my book, it is my belief that we have an incredible... we've made incredible strides creating assets to deal with this stuff. That's my belief, and I'm not speaking for my company. This is just me
assets.
Speaking. Yeah,
meaning some sort of a government agency that's been designed or put together international.
International.
Okay, so some sort of an international collaboration to deal with the threat of alien life. And that was enough that they pulled you aside and wouldn't let you go for 2 days and just interrogated you?
So it was an interrogation, but it was a pretty heavy debriefing of how I got to where I was. And it's not like they didn't let me go home. This took place at a hotel near my home.
But they made you sit down and talk to them.
Oh, fuck yeah. There was six of them, I think, six.
And so they let you leave and go to sleep and then come back, get something to eat and
came
back.
Spent another 8 hours, because I wasn't rogue. I wasn't like trying to hide anything. I was trying to explain to them.
How did you have all this free time, though?
What do you mean?
I mean, if somebody said, hey, we're going to have you in a room, we're going to talk to you for 2 days. I'm like, dude, I don't have 2 days.
Well, that's maybe you don't. But if
you do,
fuck yeah. When you have these people that want to get a hold of you, you don't run.
I'm not saying run. I'm saying, like, what are you guys looking for? Like, they're going to just sit you down and ask you questions for 2 days because you put together this idea that somehow or another there's some sort of an international collaboration to deal with the threat of alien life?
No, they looked at it. They didn't know. They thought I was Ed Snowden. They thought there was a group of people leaking me classified information.
They didn't know that you're from Blink 182. They didn't know that you're like a huge.
They don't care about
rock
that.
Star.
That's what they don't understand. They don't care about who I am. They just care about the material.
Right, but it should take them like 3 seconds to realize like you're not Edward Snowden. You're a rock star.
But I'm saying some pretty provocative shit. You got to realize, no one else has gone up there and talked about once again, I'm in a tricky spot right now because a lot of what happened back then, you know, I can't really get into now because of the positions and the things I'm involved with. But read the book. And
so it's just because you printed the stuff in the book that they wanted to pull you aside and talk to you about this for 2 days.
And I was all over radio and talking about it, and I was saying some other crazy shit that I can't repeat. So if people are listening, if they want to go back and look at those interviews, that's a better way to...
Okay, so you had said something in those interviews that you can't say again because they told you to stop talking about it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did they tell you to stop talking about the fact that you can't talk about it?
No, I mean, I don't think that's the issue. The more of the issue was, what are you trying to achieve?
Right.
And once they found out who I was working with, they were like, holy shit. And they only found that out when WikiLeaks broke into John Podesta's emails and I was having video conferences and conference calls with, he was Obama's senior advisor at the time. So the Wall Street Journal broke the story. Like, what's this rock star talking about UFOs with Hillary Clinton's campaign manager?
Mm-hmm.
No, he was Obama's senior advisor. So it had nothing to do with Hillary, you know? So we were setting these up. And when that broke, I had to call up my partner from the CIA and I said, you know, I got to say, I can talk to you a little bit more about who these people are. And that's where I gained a really large amount of credibility with them, but also where they realized that we got to figure out a better way to do this. And what you see is me and some very important people coming together to do something that I think is really beneficial to society. But we have a lot of work to do because a lot of people they don't know what to think of it. At first, they thought I was nuts when I was talking about my book. I'm all, oh, I got these advisors, you know. And then all of a sudden, the Wall Street Journal broke this story, and there's all these multi-star generals and head of some really big aerospace companies. And then the big news organizations were like, holy shit, this might be real. A lot of kids still don't know, and they're having fun on the internet. And then I came out a couple weeks ago on stage with all these people. Now it's like, now all the big, huge, I'm dealing with some crazy, big mainstream press that we're trying to keep at bay for a variety of reasons. But yes, it's all true. And what To the Stars is really after is how do we bring the public in on this and work together to communicate and educate this stuff? How do we bring the technology out of the shadows and build it for the world? And how do we tell the story in documentaries, nonfiction, fictional works over a period of years. And if we do that, the public owns it. The public has a say. They're a part of it. And then people will start to understand over time why they did what they did. They didn't lie to people just out of like ego. It's they were like, okay, there's this group called ISIS and they're here and we need to understand them and we need to fucking figure it out quick. But the problem is, these are extraordinarily advanced civilizations that have been coming here forever. That's why it's all in all the ancient fucking scripts and texts and carved into rocks and all that shit. But trying to figure it out, trying to connect the dots and looking at debris that they probably still have in a warehouse going, we have no fucking clue how to make this or back engineer this stuff. I mean, there's a piece of metal from a crash that I've seen, and I've seen the science on it, and it's atomically aligned, and it's layered in like 80 layers within just a few microns of purities of metal that aren't even in our solar system, and they think it needs to be made in an area where there's no gravity. So number one, it has to be made in space. Number two, even if we were to create a machine that can potentially do some of this stuff, 3D printing layers of different metals that are of obscene purities, it would cost hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. We don't even have that.
Why do they think it was made without gravity?
Because I think it's the atomic structure. So what happens is when you radiate it with terahertz, it loses mass. Something weird. It resonates some kind of harmonic, and then it gets lighter. And if you hit it with enough terahertz, it'll float. So we're going to be showing people this stuff. We're going to be bringing out the hardware, some of the hardware. We're going to be bringing out implants. We're going to be bringing out videos. We're going to be bringing out some other stuff.
So you're going to be showing people this actual physical piece of metal that was constructed in a zero gravity environment in space. And if you hit it with enough energy, it becomes weightless.
No, I wouldn't say weightless. I don't know if we can make enough energy to do that. But yes, that is our plan. And show the experiment. So
okay, well, if you can't Give it enough energy to make it weightless. Can you give it enough energy to reduce the mass?
Yes.
So it weighs less?
Yes.
And you can prove this?
Yes. And that's why.
So you can have a scale and you can put this piece of metal on a scale.
I'll do you better. It's not even that. It's warping the space-time continuum around the object. So you shoot. What you can do is you can shoot an electron over it. Why it's not being radiated. A single electron? Uh-huh, and you collect it and time that. And
how do you shoot a single electron?
Fuck if I know. I'm not a physicist. They just do this shit. That's what they do. So, and I was actually on a phone call today about it. I talked for about 45 minutes in the car on the way up here about some of the...
How would they even be able to regulate whether or not they have a single electron?
Well, fuck, they're doing crazier shit than that at CERN. At CERN, they're taking particles of atoms, mm-hmm. and they're speeding them up to light speed.
Almost light speed.
Yeah, and slamming them into each other. So I'm not too worried about electrons. Electrons
and
photons.
This is an enormous building that's, I think it's, what is it? CERN's like 10 miles in a loop.
Yeah, but you've seen an electron microscope, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the size of half of this
table. But I'm saying they're launching a single electron at this thing.
I think that's what they do, yeah.
Hmm.
They do that with photons too, by the way. I read a really cool study about single photons, and consciousness was interacting with it. Just by thinking, it was changing the way the photon went. It's crazy.
Mm.
So what happens is you shoot this electron, and you know how fast it is to travel over this piece of metal. Mm-hmm. Then you radiate it with terahertz, and then
what does that mean? Radiate it with terahertz.
You're electrifying and charging the piece of material.
Do you know what's a terahertz?
It's a high frequency wave. I don't want to pretend I know that much about it. I just know that the earlier tests were with radio waves like RF. And they need to do terahertz. So I don't know much more than that.
So by
shooting terahertz at it, the piece of metal can lose mass. And then when you shoot an electron over it, it'll be a different time than the other one when it's not turned on. Does that make sense?
No.
The time it takes for an electron to go over the piece of metal.
What's that, Jamie?
This is why I type in terahertz imaging.
Laser guided codes, advanced single pixel terahertz imagery. And this B, the image is sampled upon instructions from a laser. A, the terahertz light passes through the object. And then C, the information is collected to reconstruct the image.
Look at that. So with this stuff.
But it's just an imaging technology.
But you're timing how fast it takes an electron to move over the surface of the metal. Then you charge the metal. And then you're timing the exact same thing. And there will be different times. And the positive result is that it lost mass, so it traveled faster or slower or whatever the hell is supposed to happen. So,
and so I would imagine that this piece of metal, if it exists, would be kind of game over. If you brought this piece of metal to the most advanced scientists in metallurgy or whatever they would be that would understand this kind of shit.
Yeah, and it's already been there. But the problem is
there anywhere online where people can read about this?
There actually is. There's some of this stuff, not this piece in particular. They came out as arts parts on Arts Bell a long time ago, and they're different layers of bismuth and magnesium. But but this one came from a crash in 48, not the 47. And I know nothing more about it. But I don't think it's anything they're going to come in here with a chain of custody and say, this came from Air Force or something mm-hmm. like that. You know, I don't know who has this.
So you're going to bring this and demonstrate this to people?
Yeah. And the reason is because we're also going to show videos that just got declassified from our most advanced systems. I think they call it the Aegis system. It's a radar system and forward-looking infrared of UFOs. I have those in possession actually already. And so we're going to show the videos that the first time in history, by the way, that videos of UFOs have been declassified. There's been leaks and there's been people catching shit on their phones, but I have all the chain of custody, all the documents and everything. And we just got those a few weeks ago and there's a shitload more coming. And so we'll release the videos and we'll show the experiment as a proof of concept so everyone knows this shit's all real. Because right now they're just looking at a drawing and they're looking at this guy from the Skunk Works, you know, and just going, how the fuck are they going to build a machine that plays with time and plays with the fabric of space-time? And so we have to kind of educate people and say, it's possible.
Is that this thing?
Yeah, that's it. There.
Advanced electrogravitic propulsion. Is that how you say that?
Electrogravitic.
Gravitic.
So what that does, what the machine does that we're building is there's an electromagnetic wave that is the foundation of everything, of all mass, of everything. Like some people call it zero point energy. Some people call it the vacuum energy. But like 1 inch of air could power the United States for like hundreds of years, kind of thing, or maybe more. So what they got to do is isolate very specific atoms to where all the noise of all matter and cell phones and everything that's going on Earth can be separated from this one atom. And if you can do that with the right material, you can get access to that electromagnetic wave that's powering the atom, the invisible wave pattern that's under everything of all existence. And once you do that, it's not like splitting an atom. This is the power behind the atom. It's extraordinarily dangerous, but it's also what will turn that thing on, and it'll turn into a ball of light and just disappear. And I could show you a video of something doing that. That's actually on YouTube. You know.
Okay, tell Jamie what it is.
I could search it for a second. How about this? Well, there's no commercial breaks, is there?
No.
Well, fuck.
Yeah, just search it. I'll search
just
it
describe right. it. And we'll search it.
You know what? If you type in Astra, the TR3B, Astra TR3B. And I'll walk over there. Can I walk over there for a second?
Sure,
I'll show
them
which one
sure.
it is.
Go ahead.
Is his mic on too?
Yeah.
So we can all talk to each other?
Sort of.
So what you want to do is come down here, and do your people get to...
They'll be able to see it. We'll put it up on the screen.
So what this is... I don't really want to tell you what it is, but I want you to watch it.
You can't hear me right now.
Is this... That's not it. One more page. I'll find it for you. Just takes me a second. There's a bunch of this shit. This is the craft, by the way. That's... In, did you spell it right? Astro, that's why, sorry. Astro.
Oh, Astro. Astro, not Astro. Yeah. You're typing it at home.
Right. We gotta make sure it's the right one.
We're looking on YouTube, ladies and gentlemen. If you're in your car right now going, what the fuck is going on in this show? Most, the vast majority of the people just listen to this show. So for the people that are just listening and you want to go check it out, TR-38 Astra Aurora Project 3B. USAF. Oh, 3B, sorry.
This is the Craft and Secret Machines book. That's all I'm going to say.
And this thing is floating in the air.
It'll take a few seconds till they turn on the engine.
That looks pretty badass.
Oh, wait. You can see little lights dancing around on the bottom. But I think this was leaked on purpose because the guy's making it just hard enough to see, moving the camera around in and out of focus.
Yeah, right? Like, it's got, like, he's barely focusing. So, boy, that looks like a drone.
Well,
it looks small, too.
It's not. That's pretty big. I would think that one's about 40 feet.
Really?
Look, see the tail fins on the back? That's how you know it's not alien, per se. It's built off, I think, technology that came from there, but, you know... They don't need vertical tail stabilizers.
What's that big light?
Okay, this is the engine. They turn it on. So right now they're accessing that energy I told you about. Now, and watch what happens. It's gone.
There's a pilot in that.
If that was in a movie, I'd want my money back.
Why?
This movie can suck my dick.
Why?
That looks so fake.
Oh, you think that? Yeah.
It look fake. What is that? TR-3B is real?
There's another one? This is the same one, but these ones are stacked, and that's a drone that came out of one.
That's a drone?
The small one is.
Oh, the little thing that came out the side?
Yeah. But if you can look up Black Triangle UFO and find hundreds of these videos.
So these are people, like civilians that are getting this from the ground? They're filming this?
I don't know. I don't know where this one came from.
Jamie, this is not the same account as the last video?
It's a different video.
I just started up next because it's probably a highly viewed TR-3B video.
Right. How many views does this have?
474,000.
Damn.
There's so many
people know now.
There's hundreds of these out there.
Oh, but it separates from the other one?
But everyone thinks it's alien, and that's not my belief.
So you think this is something along the lines like when they had the stealth bomber program?
Absolutely.
And they were experimenting with these things. What do you think of Robert Lazar? Do you think that guy's real?
I'm putting out his autobiography.
So you do think he's legit?
You should read his book. Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. He's a fascinating character, right?
He is. His story's really interesting, too. Where he really fucked up, though, so for the people that don't know that are listening, he's a guy that came out. He's the reason we know about Area 51. He literally is the guy that broke the story of its existence. He got brought in for a job, and during the interviews, they said, "We have another idea for you." And they put him in a place he claims had all these disks, and he was on a back engineering team as a physicist. But what happened was they rushed him in there because, per his story, they tried to cut into one of the propulsion devices, and it exploded and killed a bunch of scientists. So the Nevada test site, which is the area where Area 51 and all that stuff is, released a statement that they were just doing a small little nuke test, but it was really because of this thing. And so they rushed him in there without doing all of his background checks, because it takes 6 months to a year. And during those background checks, he was already working on this stuff. They found that his wife was going a little haywire because he couldn't tell her what he was doing. And he would leave in the middle of the night. He'd be gone for a week, and she was getting fed up. And so she started having an affair. And so they're listening in on all the phone calls and checking him out. And they're kind of going, his home life is unstable. So they stopped calling him to come into work while they figure it out. He knows, I mean, he's working next to a guy with a machine gun. He knows that, that this is no fucking joke. No one knows what he's been doing. He thought he did something wrong. So as the nervous individual he is, he runs to his friends and says, "This is what I've been doing. This is what I've been working on. There's alien craft. It's over here at Groom Lake. And the tests are every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. And his wife goes, "Holy shit." And his friend goes, "Holy shit." And he goes, "Come on, I'll show you." So they drive 3 hours north of Vegas outside on public land, and they videotape and watch these UFOs come up and be tested and dart around and disappear. And he goes, "That's the one I'm working on." And it's almost like, "Well, how did you know what time?" "Because I'm working on it." Well, he does this three times. I think it was three times. And on the third time, they got caught because I've been there. There's security that travels those mountains. You always hear about those guys out there in Area 51. And when they caught him, they were like, "Holy fuck. He's like, what the fuck is he doing? You know, why is he telling everyone?" So he runs to the news station with George Knapp, who's another he's a host on Coast to Coast. And he tells him what he's doing, and he just goes live on Las Vegas news, and it caught like wildfire across the world. And so then these guys grabbed him, put him in a room, put a gun to his head, and said, "When we told you not to say anything, we didn't mean say everything, you know." And he got really scared. They started fucking with him. I was actually in a meeting two nights ago talking about some of the things they did. One of the things he did, he went to a gym. He didn't have access to a lot of guns, but for some fucking reason, he had like an Uzi. It was in his glove compartment. He goes to a gym and he comes out and his car doors are open. The glove compartment is open and the Uzi's just sitting on his chair. He got shot at on the freeway, and they erased a bunch of his records. And he's still to this day really nervous about it. He always claimed for a while he claimed he had part of – this is what I will say. He claimed the energy source was an element that was very heavy, and it was like unobtainium or something like that, 115. Element. And 25 years ago, he talked all about it. And then literally 3 years ago, maybe four, they added it to the periodic table.
What is this stuff called again?
I think it's called unobtainium. It's one element 115. It's on. And that's the other thing is people don't realize. Oh, holy shit. 25 years ago, he says this element comes from a binary star system and it's really heavy. There's a certain isotope that's stable. They'll find it. And then all of a sudden, I remember one day I was driving my car and I heard it like on CNN, new element added to the periodic table. I was like, holy shit, you know, but it's pretty interesting. Crazy story. Yeah.
Well, they erased his story. What was the claim that they had erased his educational record?
Well, I think he might have I don't know if I think this because I don't know. I never researched it, but people that I know that have research that think he might have kind of upgraded his resume a little bit, and maybe he didn't go to MIT.
Right. That was a claim. But they also said that he really did work for what's that lab in New Mexico?
Oh, Lawrence Livermore and JPL.
JPL.
Yeah, JPL's in Pasadena, yeah.
But whatever it was in New Mexico, that they had found that he actually did work in the building, even though they tried to say that he didn't.
Oh, yeah,
so
maybe,
that he
yeah.
did something with somebody. And however much of his story was true, always gets fishy when you find one thing that's not true, like that he didn't go to MIT. So, you know,
totally.
Stanton Friedman.
Yeah.
You know Stanton Friedman is? Yeah. Stanton Friedman, who's a very famous UFO researcher. He's one of the main guys arguing that Bob Lazar is full of shit.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is I know the guy that did all the research on that, and I know the guy that studied it for decades, and he's actually writing a foreword on the book. It's the journalist has won like 8 Peabody Awards and Emmys and shit. but George Knapp, who I told you about, and he's just got like he can speak for hours on that entire.
He's always
thing.
On the Coast to Coast show, right?
Yeah, he does like a couple Sundays each month.
You did you find that Element?
Oh yeah, yeah.
What is it? Element 115. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Popular Mechanics article about it right here.
Welcome, Element 115. Now, what's your real name? Researchers create Element 115 in the lab for the second time over the first time, overall in the first time in a decade, paving the way for its official status as a member of the periodic table. And so, Google Bob Lazar, Element 115. Because
yeah.
I would think that if he knew that, like that long ago, like that alone would make people want to take him more seriously.
Yeah.
All the stuff that he said. Well, first of all, we know that there is a Groom Lake. We know that there is an Area 51. We know they denied its existence, and so they wanted to expand the perimeter. Till they wanted to, because people would sit on a ledge and they would watch all these test flights of whatever the fuck they had, whatever it was they were doing, whether working on stealth bombers, whatever it was. People would film this, and so they wanted to expand the perimeter of prohibited area, and so in doing so, they had to admit the existence of the base itself. Yeah. I believe that was in the 90s, right?
It was in the 90s. They expanded the perimeter. Something else that the government had to do is they had to admit UFOs were real because there was some military people. Look at it.
Yeah,
he talks about 115 all through this,
and
through
what,
this episode.
What year is this, Jamie? Does it say the video on the bottom? What is it? When is it? Was this put out? This video.
Well, this one here is 2015, but the video was taken on VHS.
Old as fuck.
This is like 1990, maybe.
It's on the Sci-Fi Channel. Doo 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 doo. Back when it was spelled sci-fi.
Yeah, everyone uses a lot of the
S-Y-F-Y.
Yeah,
so that's old as fuck.
Yeah.
Play some of that though, because that dude's a trip. Because he's one of those weird guys where even if you're a skeptical guy, you listen to Bob Lazar talk and you're like, this guy's obviously smart as fuck. Here we go.
Is in the top of the reactor, and the base of the reactor apparently is a small, something similar to a cyclotron. It's a particle accelerator. A particle is accelerated to high speed and then deflected up a small tube. And it's aimed at the 115. This transmutes the 115, similar to the way we do that in a normal particle accelerator. This causes a reaction, a radiation emission that we really haven't seen before. It produces antimatter. This antimatter is guided down a tuned tube and reacts with a gas. When matter and antimatter react, they convert to 100% energy. This energy is converted, heat energy, is converted to electrical power in the reactor itself. This is done through a thermoelectric converter. And this electrical power is used to power other subsystems on the craft, though there is no wiring, you know, as we would know it. Also, that's almost a byproduct of the reactor. The reactor also sets up a gravitational wave from the 115 being bombarded. This gravitational wave is present at the top of the reactor and is essentially guided in the same way microwaves are guided through tuned tubes. And this goes to their amplifying cavities and through the projectors that are in the bottom of the craft.
God, I wish I was smart enough to know whether or not he's full of shit.
Well, so what he's saying is that there's a gravity wave that's accessible on a really large element that extends beyond the perimeter of the atom. Mm-hmm. And when you bombard that element with one particle, kind of like what we were talking about before, it goes through a tuned tube, like a very tiny miniature CERN. Mm-hmm. CERN's like a big magnet. It holds a particle in a very specific spot. It hovers. It shoots and it hits that. It decays. It becomes this matter-antimatter reaction. These generators can convert all that energy into power, and then they can amplify that wave that's coming off and emanating from that element. And they amplify it like you would amplify a radio wave. Now, there's no wires in the craft because most likely it was 3D printed. We didn't know about 3D printing back then. I've talked to Bob about this, but not just 3D printing, you know, just the materials, but atomically aligning the elements so consciousness and other types of things can move through those materials to operate the craft. It's really
so
tricky.
They're operating it without buttons.
Right.
They're operating it. So that was one of the things that he said theoretically, right? Yeah. Was that there was handprints and that, you know, they were much different shaped hands than ours.
Yeah.
And this craft that he had found inside one of these bays in Area 51, he realized very quickly that it wasn't something that we had created, and that it was somehow or another powered through intention.
Yep.
That would go through like touch or feel, or put their hands would be on this thing, and consciously you would somehow or another control all the various aspects of this machine.
Exactly. Exactly.
Boy, it sounds good, doesn't it? God, I want to believe. So hard.
Well, I hope you do, because there's gonna be a lot of stuff.
But I want to know what you've seen, though. So you've seen this piece of metal. What else have you seen?
I've seen many documents on the studies of these things, and I've seen a lot of the science associated with what the technology is and what it does. Like, I could show you if I fold up pieces of paper and stuff what's going on with it, but. Basically, you know, these craft, you know, when they travel in a straight line, but they're folding space-time.
Like in Event Horizon, where they explain it by folding a piece of paper and punching a pencil through it. Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of like
fucking
that
movie.
But it's more like, you know, here, I can draw it for you here. Not that this is a... It's kind of like when you have two points, you know, we're used to traveling in a direction like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we look up, we see a plane that goes straight.
Right.
But these UFOs fold space-time like this. And so it looks like, to them, they're going in a straight line. So if you're in the ship, you see that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on the ground, you see that.
Okay.
That's why you see them blink off and on. A lot of those videos, they're on. They go, it looks like they're jumping. It's just because of this.
So
they're folding space-time.
Some way of interfacing with space itself that's very different than our idea of traveling in a linear way from point A to point B.
Space, the fabric, they call it the fabric of space-time because it's like a fabric. It's malleable.
Now, let me ask you this. How often into a conversation do people look at you and think you are fucking crazy when you start talking about this? And how long
all
does
the time, yeah.
All the time, right? But do you ever get to the point where you're like, I don't want to talk about this?
No, because it's I always tell people, you don't know what I know, you know, and there's a lot.
I mean, like, do you ever know. Get to the point where you're like, I can't do this anymore?
No.
Like, people think I'm fucking crazy.
No, because I'm involved on the most important shit I've ever been in my life.
So like, you think this is like the most important thing that you've ever done in your life?
Oh, fuck yeah. Like, I have meetings with senators coming up. Like,
do you?
Oh, fuck yeah.
What senators?
I can't tell you.
Damn, it's all this I can't tell you stuff.
I know, because so this is some fucking tricky shit.
When is all this going to come out? Like, it seems like this is like eminent rather disclosure type shit.
Watch
right?
What my company does. That's what I'll say.
So what is your company? What are you trying to do?
Well, we created. So if you look at the people involved, we have senior high. When you get to the senior levels of government, you're either called an SES or SIS, Senior Intelligence Service, Senior Executive Service, or you're brass. But either way, the civilians have the same kind of ranking charter that the brass does. So SES three would be the same thing as a 3-star general. So that's who these people are around me. So I had the head of the Skunk Works engineering. I got, you know, a SIS 2-star from the clandestine directorate of operations. I have a guy undersecretary of intelligence for the Senate Intelligence Committee and was...
These guys are retired?
The quasi.
Everyone's retired? Quasi-retired.
Well, they all
left.
They are our current...
Public life. They are, now are involved with what you're doing.
The way they are current consultants to the internet, the intelligence community.
Okay.
That's probably the most
And involved in this project with clearance?
They all have their top secret TSSCI clearances, yeah. I'm the only one that does it. On my entire team, I'm the only one that does it. Actually, Lou, that just came out, I hired him away. So he was head of all he was in charge of all classified operations for Secretary of Defense Mattis. So he was what's called a GS-15. Right underneath the 1, 2, and 3 stars. He ran the Advanced Aerial Threat Program, and it's still continuing to this day, and he's with us now.
So the Advanced Aerial Threat Program under the United States government is essentially a UFO...
That's one of the
information
many.
Gathering and
yes,
assessment.
Assessment of all of the... of what those machines are doing that gives off all these types of... effects that people are witnessing, but there's also a very large group of people that have had within government that have had close contact, like hundreds, and it's connected to my group, and there's just more coming in that way. So that program is trying to figure out what those technologies did to those people and how those technologies work even though it's more about tasking, you know, our assets like satellites and other things to be able to find these things better. But this is different than the Secret Machines book, which is more of another thing altogether.
So is there communication between the United States government and alien life forms?
I personally, I don't know any of this stuff because I'm not invited to those types of meetings, but I personally wouldn't doubt it, yeah.
You wouldn't doubt it, but they've never alluded to it or discussed it with you in any way?
Not this group of people, no.
Is there any speculation as to what they're doing?
Resource extraction.
Resource extraction, like our minerals,
empire building.
Life,
I tell people
sperm,
that the
eggs.
I think it's
cheese.
I think it's tacos.
They're here
I
for
think
water.
They're here for the same reason I am. But I tell people like a good way to look at this is like look at Syria, and Syria's in chaos because the United States and Russia are having a proxy war there. Mm-hmm. Now look at the Earth; it's the exact same thing. Different races are coming here. And they're trying to win and against
each
other.
So there's more than one race.
Oh yeah, yeah.
How many
this universe we're talking about.
Right.
I don't know how many. I don't know.
But there's a bunch of different creatures, and they all have the same sort of technology.
Yeah, and some are very human. Some are look just like you and I.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, is there any sort of speculation as to why life forms from other planets, other galaxies, other solar systems, different kind of gravity, different environments, would create a life form that's exactly similar to us? Or are they imitating what we look like in order to infiltrate our world and hang with us?
I think probably
unknowingly.
All the above. I mean, look, if you look at like Syria, are you just going to say it's only Russia and America there? No, China's probably there. France is probably there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I personally think the little aliens with the big black eyes, those are androids. They're biological robots. They're just programmed. There's no different than us cloning sheep. They just clone a being that can travel through space because space
or
is
some
very
sort
big.
Of an artificial intelligence thing that doesn't have
AI.
A life form, right? I've heard that idea before, and it kind of makes sense a little bit, right? I mean, if you're a living thing and you're traveling through space, obviously you have biological limitations in terms
yep.
of the need for oxygen and gravitational interactions and all these different things.
Well,
that
one
would
of the scary hallmarks of those ones, the rumor is it in the back of their head is a transmitter. So you got to wonder where it's sending shit. But at the same time, you know, I can tell you that when you look at the Bible, the angels and the demons of the Bible would be the humans and the androids that I just told you about.
So you think the grays are the androids, right?
Yeah.
And so you think they're like some sort of devil?
No. I just think that that's how we characterized it because they come in, control
right.
your thoughts, control your body, take
you. Take us in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Demons, you know.
Do you think these things are traveling from where? Do we have any idea?
There's things that have been put out there, but I've never asked.
Why would you not ask that?
What the fuck? You're going to tell me star system like 483? And
you know about element 115. I would want to know about Starship Enterprise coordinate 115B65 Polaris, wherever the fuck it is.
I don't know. I don't know. I do know that there's connections to Man, you won't even fucking believe it. I'll tell you that. You want to hear
Please.
It? Atlantis.
Atlantis, the sunken city?
Yeah.
There's a connection?
There's a connection.
What's the connection?
That there's a very advanced group that left after a catastrophe and hung around in a small outpost here and throughout time would push civilization forward, and that's who the Greek gods were.
Whoa.
Yep. And that's why it's very interesting on the Roswell wreckage, there's Greek writing.
Is there?
There is.
I've never seen any of the wreckage from Roswell. Have you?
It's online. You see it. Type in Roswell wreckage. You can see it.
Well,
type
all in I've ever seen is the dude standing in front of the bullshit, the weather balloon stuff, or
look
the laughing and yucking it up.
Roswell wreckage, Roswell I-beam. You'll see it. And it's got these Greek markings. As far and the witnesses that were there where they go on oath and tell. So that
actual I-beam showing the word Eleftheria.
Which means freedom in ancient Greek. So
where is that from, Jamie?
Let me tell you.
I don't know. It popped up when it.
I'm going to tell you something else. So
okay.
I went and met a former director of CIA and NSA. He was director of both. I won't tell you his name. And right when I sat down and told him about my book.
Pull that picture up again. Look at those little hands.
And right when I sat down and told him about my. This is a big deal.
Okay,
what I'm about. So I'm sitting with this guy. He was like not that long ago, was director of CIA, and he went on to be director of NSA.
Okay. Well, I think we can find his name.
Maybe. But right when I sat down and told him about the book, you know what he says to me?
What?
He goes, I didn't read much science fiction as a kid, but I read a lot about Greek mythology. And looked me in the eye. I said, well, you're going to love the last page of my book then. He's like, am I? And when my book was about ready to go to pressing, I had a very important person call me up. He says, can you stop that pressing and maybe insert something about Greek mythology? And I said, I sure can. So one, something you got to realize is, for example, the sixth biggest defense contractor in the world, at least they used to be six, is a company called Science Applications International Corporation, SAIC. Their headquarters are actually in San Diego. And in the front of the building, you have an obelisk coming out of a fake lake and two Atlantean on thrones. And they're both holding pyramids. And one says the past and one says the future. And they're 8 foot tall statues. It's fucking nuts, by the way. And SAIC, they went over to Litos.
Michael Hayden, former director of NSA and the CIA.
What about it? No, that's not him. Mm-hmm. But I'm not gonna tell you if you try and find out. Look at you guys just fishing around over here.
I'll say a name. You blink.
Yeah.
I'll show you my.
Yeah. No pun intended.
Like what you did there.
That was cute. I'll show you my dick. Like,
if
you
get the,
yeah, yeah. There we go.
If you
if you
come
get
across
it right or wrong, yeah, not sure what.
Yeah. Whatever you get, I'm gonna show you my dick.
What do you think about all that Zechariah Sitchin stuff?
I think he was close. I don't think he was exact, but it's interpretive. You know, if I was to show you some symbols.
For people who don't know what that is,
Zechariah Sitchin is a Palestinian scholar that decoded a lot of ancient Sumerian texts that were written in Akkadian. Sumer was like kind of the first civilization that was advanced that we even know of, just out of nowhere here, like 3,500 years before Christ. There's mathematics, astronomy, and all this different shit. They knew all the planets. They said there's an extra planet. But Zechariah Sitchin was the one that really spent a lot of time doing that. And there's a lot of other scholars that disagree. Now, he can say, you know, in those texts is the story of the Garden of Eden, the flood of Noah, like all that shit. But his take on it was those who from heaven to earth came, called them angels, but they were an advanced race. They fucked around with genetics.
Well, that was his take on the definition of Nephilim.
Which
the
you find in, you find that in Genesis, yeah. The Nephilim. So, you know, he was able to tell a really interesting story based on these texts. And but some people don't agree with them. But at the end of the day, I think it's the closest thing we got. And in my early conversations, when I was being given some interesting science fiction stuff for my book, the Greek mythology part, I brought up the Sumerians, and they showed me one particular king. They said, we find this one very interesting. And I can't remember his name, but it fired so quick when I asked the question. It came right back with this whole thing on this one Sumerian king. Really interesting.
Well, what's fascinating about them is that they really did know a lot about our solar system. And you think about the fact that they were around 5,000 years ago. They had a detailed model of the solar system with all of the planets, and they were all relatively close in size. This is one of those clay cylinders that you would – what you would do is you would put out a flat piece of clay, and you would roll the cylinder over it, and that's how they would print things.
Yep.
And this really sort of – kind of primitive way of doing this, somehow or another, they knew a lot about astronomy. I mean, they knew about the structure of our solar system. They knew where the planets were.
Right. Well, you got to remember, Galileo was almost killed and confined to his house arrest because he said that the universe doesn't revolve around us. We revolve around the sun. And that was way after. That's 4,000 or 5,000 years after the Sumerians that already knew that, you know, we weren't the center of the universe. So,
right.
It's interesting. We were really smart, and then we went kind of backwards, you know, and there's probably a bit more to that story, too, that hopefully one day we'll get into it.
Well, it's really interesting when you look at these ancient civilizations and their attempts to decipher the world around them, and you try to figure out what did they know, you know, how much did they know. The Sumerians are one of the more interesting cases to me because of the fact that they had this really bizarre map of the solar system.
Yeah.
When, you know, we didn't – they found out about Pluto. They had an image of Pluto. And I don't think we found out about Pluto until, like, the early 1900s.
Yeah, Pluto might have even been, like, 50s
Jamie,
or 60s.
Jamie, see if you can find that out.
Pluto was found, like not even – that long ago. I don't even know if it was as far back as the 1900s.
See if you could find that out and then find the image of the Anunnaki when they show the solar system, because the image is really fascinating because it is what it is. I mean, you look at it, there's a sun. I mean, it's clearly a sun. It has like a, it's a large circle. It's in the sky, and it has like those little sun sort of rays around it.
This picture, right? Because it has the nine.
Yeah,
that's the picture.
There you go. Yeah. So do you know they have an idea of where to look for this extra planet. They thought in the early 90s, JPL announced that they thought they found a companion to our sun.
Yeah, look at that. I mean, that's fucking radical right there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They have Pluto in there. Now, go to the discovery of Pluto. When did Pluto get discovered? I think you're right. I think it was in the 1950s. I know it was sometime in the 1900s.
Well, I'm talking about Disney's Pluto. Which one are you talking about? 1930.
Crazy.
Crazy shit.
Yeah, so these people somehow or another knew about Pluto fucking way before us. And this is not something you could see with the naked eye. So somehow or another, and nor were those other planets. I mean, you could see a few of them. You could see Mars, and sometimes you could see Jupiter. And maybe Saturn, right? Can you see Saturn? What are the ones you can see with
sometimes
the naked eye?
You can see Saturn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But after that, like, they had Uranus. You can't see Uranus. You
know? Just the other day, every 25 years you can barely see it with the naked eye. Which
Uranus?
Was like last week or something like that.
Yeah, Uranus
or Saturn?
A bunch
of people were at Griffith Observatory. It was like super crowded because of that.
We're not going to make jokes and shit about Uranus, right?
No.
Because it's so old. It's expected. We'll skip
that. Yeah, and were they looking at it with the naked eye or with telescopes?
I mean, I feel like you could obviously.
Why would they go to the
Griffith
Observatory?
Because everyone goes there. There's a bunch of telescopes already set up every day.
But that makes sense for telescopes. But why with the naked eye?
Because it's one of the best places, closest in LA. Or I don't know. I'll look.
Okay. Yeah, LA's weird because of the light pollution, right?
No, it's a big deal. Yeah. Like, that's why you know when you go to the desert and it's beautiful and you're like, whoa. Yeah. You know, that's what you're really
seeing. It was last week, October 19th, you could see with your naked eye.
The Uranus, you could see with your naked eye.
You guys are talking about naked and Uranus a lot here, and I don't want to make any jokes. I'm not, but I'm just telling you what you're talking about.
See Uranus with your naked eye this week. Giggle if you must.
Nice.
What a goofy name, too. Like, what? All the different sounds you can make with your face, and they chose your butthole?
What if they just call it Butthole?
Yeah, Butthole, Planet Butthole. That would be just as weird.
I would go there fucking crazy fast. It would be the first place I go.
That would be the first place you'd visit, Planet Butthole?
Yeah.
Do you think that there's life in our solar system?
I do.
Where do you think it is?
Europa.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you think there's some sort of a primitive life form that's under the ice?
I think there's life on Mars, and I think it's... we'll start from... I think there's life on Mars. I think it's... small little animals and microbial or you know, insects, shit that's kind of learning how to live with its radioactive environment. Which, by the way, a bunch of scientists from JPL found that there was some atomic weapons that went off on Mars because the radioactive signature can only happen if you explode a nuclear weapon that's artificially made, not like something that happens naturally, like a moon exploding on the surface. So it's interesting. So
where'd you read that?
Oh shit, that's been all over the place. I forgot the guy's name, the doctor's name. He actually was one of the lead scientists on the Clementine mission, which was mapping the moon with JPL. So he's a big time dude.
And he thinks there was nuclear war
on
Mars.
Huge. Well, he doesn't say that. He just says that.
Oh, nuclear weapon exploded on Mars.
He just says we have this signature. All peer-reviewed science that the signature of the radioactive activity from this very specific isotope that only comes from artificial nuclear explosion or something. Shit. I don't want to mess it up.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Well, I'd heard before that they thought that somehow or another Mars was impacted, that something hit it, like some sort of an asteroidal impact, and it destroyed the environment.
I think it's if you type in nuclear weapon Mars or nukes on Mars or some shit, you'll find it.
You go to Richard Hoagland's site.
Hoagland shows Hoagland's you all there. He kind of disappeared, though.
Yeah, that guy was wacky as fuck. Like he was one of the main proponents of the face on Mars. And all the pyramids that they found on Mars, they would find these weird connections between one point to another point, and somehow or another they made some arbitrary distinctions that those were indicative of intelligent design.
Did you know Elon Musk wanted to drop nukes up there too, apparently?
Good move. Elon Musk elaborates on his proposal to nuke Mars.
How's that picture? He's like, why not?
He's probably bored. He put on his Instagram last night. He was cooking hot dogs and marshmallows and singing along with Johnny Cash, drinking whiskey.
That's what he should be doing.
That's my kind of fucking scientist.
Yeah.
That's Elon Musk for president. I'll vote for you, buddy. come on. Let's do it.
I know.
Why don't you talk to him, man? He's already got SpaceX. Why don't you guys collaborate?
The second thing we're doing, he might really actually be interested in it. So the two aerospace projects To the Stars is doing, one is we're building something that will, in effect, be anti-gravity, but that's actually not the mechanism it does in building a spacecraft. But the second thing that we're doing is called beamed energy propulsion, which is something I think Musk will be very interested in. It's launching CubeSats with lasers. So the Air Force Research Lab kind of broke the science back in the 90s, and a bunch of people associated with that program got it declassified, and they're working for us on building it. So it'll take a handful of years to do, but what you do is you use very strong either microwaves or some other kind of wave, and it ignites and explodes the air underneath a mechanism that carries a CubeSat. And so essentially what happens is you don't use any fossil fuels. And it can bring the cost of launching a CubeSat from like $50,000 down to $5,000. It's like crazy. So that means colleges and neighbors and anyone else can launch CubeSats quite easily.
Now, have you had any debates with people about this stuff? Have you ever like had someone who thinks that this is all nonsense and sat down with you, understands physics and understands rocket propulsion and space and elements and all that shit?
I haven't. I wouldn't be able to debate a physicist, but they can read all the papers. You know.
Right, but I mean, has anybody been skeptical? Has
everyone's skeptical, right. Yeah.
And what's your response to that?
You don't know what I know.
Right, well, what do you know, though, that they don't know?
I can't tell you some of the shit that I know, and I can't tell you...
But what could it be that's so crazy if you know, I mean, what you've said? Well, think about what you've said. You said that there's some ridiculous sort of propulsion system that allows you to move through time, that they visit this planet... Mm-hmm. All the time and extract resources.
Right.
That there's people in the government that are trying to disseminate this information, but they don't know how to do it. They don't know the right vehicle to do it. They're doing it in these sort of controlled chunks.
Mm-hmm.
Think of all these things that you said. What could possibly be crazier than that?
Well, you're asking me, how do I know?
Okay. I'm asking you, what do you know that could possibly be crazier than that?
Well, that's the shit I can't tell you. It's not everything's hunky-dory.
Is it something where you're worried about the fate of the human race?
I think that's part of it.
Where should I move if I was going to move?
It's not existential.
Whip your dick out if I should go to Australia.
How about I just whip my dick out in Australia?
I mean, where's the spot?
I don't think there is one, unfortunately.
There's no spot. They're just gonna...
This is what I will say. It's not existential in the sense of they're not going to come here like Independence Day and nuke the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are things to worry about. And that's why I think...
Do you think there's anybody that's famous that's an alien?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you think there's any influential figure that has been sort of shaping culture that might not be one of us?
Oprah.
Ooh.
For sure. Oprah. Has to be Oprah.
Yeah, but if you go back to the early days when Oprah used to do that stupid show where she'd have like KKK members on and everybody sat on white plastic seats. Remember those days?
Is that Geraldo or is that Oprah?
Oprah. Oh, early days, man. Me and Al Madrigal, I'll never forget this. It was like when I first met Al, probably like late 90s, I think. We were in San Francisco doing bong hits, watching TV, and Oprah was on. And it was old Oprah.
Bong
like
hits
big
and
hair
Oprah.
Oprah. God. Big hair Oprah. Might not have been the 90s. Might have been the early 2000s.
These are the aliens from Men in Black they were watching at the beginning, remember?
You know, I don't know. I mean, again, there's elements of this subject that are disturbing. And, you know, I don't think people need to know all that shit.
So do you subscribe to the idea that human beings are the product of genetic engineering?
I do, yes.
You do. So you think that they took some lower hominids and that they... did something to them to create human beings. That is a very popular theory among UFO fanatics. Devotees.
I don't want to speak again for my company, but one of the people on our board, they call it a SAB, Scientific Advisory Board, is a lead geneticist from Stanford who I think he was up for the Nobel this year.
What's his name?
Dr. Gary Nolan. And he would be the guy to ask about that.
Let's get him in here.
He's only going to tell you what he can prove with science. He's not going to speculate,
right.
You know?
So what makes people think that? Like, what's the science that makes people think that?
Well, there's a lot of junk DNA. There's certain parts of our DNA that seems to have been turned off. There's a bunch of things in there that we don't understand, and we don't have the leaps of humanity over the past 5,000 years to really show, like, what happened in the past 5,000 years that wasn't happening for the hundreds of millions of years before that. They just found a footprint that was like 100 million years old or something like that. That was just a human footprint.
What?
They did. Yeah, I just read the news story.
Where did they find that?
I don't know. I can't remember, but it's like a fossil. And now they're like, fuck, this totally throws everything upside down.
You've been talking to Sarah Palin. That was something that Sarah Palin said. Remember that? Like, there was a librarian that said that she didn't believe that she was a young Earth creationist. And she thought that there was a picture online that showed a human footprint inside a dinosaur footprint that it proved that people walked with dinosaurs.
I wouldn't doubt it.
You wouldn't doubt that people walked with dinosaurs?
Oh, not at all. I think there's been cycles of civilizations. And I think the people on the inside know that. And that's why at that defense contractor, multi-billion dollar defense contract, the ones that chose the government of Iraq after we took over Iraq, and the ones that looked over after all of our nukes.
Hey, look at there. Human footprint inside a dinosaur footprint. She's right.
But they have, at that place, remember I told you, they have the past and the future with big pyramids in their hands,
right.
Tetrahedrons, you know, that they're trying, it's like, it's just spooky when you look at that.
Do you believe that the asteroid hit the Yucatan and caused a mass extinction that killed off most of the life on the planet?
I don't know. I can't believe anything. I don't know. Fuck, I've never studied that shit, and I wasn't there.
But, I mean, there's, like, physical evidence for that.
It's more like, well, yeah, but I haven't read anything about it. But, sure, okay. I mean, I can believe in things. I can't prove a lot of things, you know.
Right, but that's, like, the whole reason why we're supposedly here, that it killed off the dinosaurs and allowed whatever. They think there was some sort of a mole-type creature that evolved over 65 million years to become
that's
us.
That's all bullshit. I think that's all bullshit.
Do you think evolution's bullshit?
No. I think that at some point in history, someone came here and tampered with existing creatures and made us and upgraded us at very specific intervals.
But who tampered with them? And what came first, the chicken or the egg?
I don't know.
A single-celled organism, we all kind of agree, like that was like the beginning, right? Most scientists, not we, I'm too stupid for this, but obviously somehow or another that became a bird, right? Why couldn't it become a monkey? Why could that monkey become a person?
I think I don't know. I mean, look, evolution changes. I mean, we know that people that like beat their kids, their kids' DNA changes based on getting beat, you know? Mm-hmm. So when you were fighting, you were changing people's DNA and you were a geneticist, you know? You went after it for science, you know? That's why you were doing the fighting, right?
Sure. It's a little lab coat on. So if you think about it that way, if you think about that all life somehow or another continues to evolve and advance and through natural selection, genetic mutation and random mutations, that things move from one stage of existence to what they are today, right? That when you look at, you know, a condor or a hippopotamus,
sure,
that it used to be something different and now it's that.
Sure.
Why wouldn't that be the case with people too?
I think that is the case with people. I just think that the quantum leaps in our evolution are symptoms or effects of being genetically upgraded.
The way I've heard it explained to me, though, is that the only leap that's really confusing is the doubling of the human brain.
I don't know. That's the big
leap, and it's over the period of 2 million years. Apparently, obviously, I'm too stupid to really understand this, but from what I've read and what I've heard people talk about, that's apparently one of the biggest mysteries when it comes to the human fossil record. But there's a pretty clear line, apparently, from Australopithecus to, you know, to the Homo sapiens.
Don't be using big words on me.
Australopithecus is not a big word.
Sounds like it.
What the fuck is that stuff again?
Penis? Uranus?
Yeah. Whatever that's called. 115? Element 115? Element?
That stuff.
That stuff. Yeah.
So what is your company aiming to do, and when are you trying to do it?
So the next steps, To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science.
Why is it an academy?
Because
teaching people?
Yeah, there's teaching, there's science, there's arts major, you know, there's film franchises. So what this
don't
is.
Don't say musicals. No musicals, right?
It's only musicals, apparently. I'm sorry.
UFO musicals. Yeah. It's like everything's cool, but it's a really stupid art form.
Oh, shit. It's a musical, but it's very salacious. Okay. Very, very sexual musicals. But okay, so what we did essentially is you have a senior engineer, chief engineer from the classified aerospace world building shit. And then you have a guy like me that's putting out some stories and making some movies about some things. And then you have my physicist.
So, can I stop you there? I'm sorry to interrupt, but why stories and why fiction? Like, why not just...
There's going to be both.
But why fiction? Why not just concentrate entirely on revealing the truth?
Because it has to be managed in a certain way for people to understand. And I think that someone sitting down and watching a debate play out and having an idea of what went on over the past 70 years, mm-hmm. they'll come out of that with an emotional response and more of an understanding, and then want to go watch the documentary and then want to buy some of the nonfiction works that we've done. I've already put out one of our nonfiction books with Secret Machines.
Now, the that movie, what is it, Arrival?
Yeah.
Was that the movie? Where there's like sort of weird time shit in that movie?
Yeah.
Does that movie have any basis in reality?
No.
Was there secret people behind the scenes?
No, I don't think so. But there's nothing in there that's familiar to me other than the fact that the dream sequences and the time stuff and her having flashes of that shit's absolutely on par. And the idea of having an international group work together to figure something out, that's absolutely on par.
That's happening right now.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody's keeping their mouth shut.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Why are they doing that? Why aren't people spilling the beans?
Well, it's not every... I mean, look at Lou Elizondo, the guy that works for me that just came from the Pentagon, literally quit the Pentagon 2 weeks ago. I was... I can't tell you where I'm at, but...
A lot of can't tell you.
I know, man. I'm sorry. But he's with me, and he was on stage with me on the live event we did on the 11th saying, I left the Pentagon days ago. I ran this particular UFO program. And this is what we know, and they are real, and we're going to continue that program here at To the Stars.
Now, but what's your goal is to release this information through documentaries, through films, and to educate people of the existence of this. And is it to make a ship?
Well, no. So we're bringing. So this is once again. Look, they're by putting together. You can't attack this subject by just like if you make a movie, something like, oh, that's a crazy movie. If you make a science paper on it, then no one's going to read it. And the technology will never see the light of day because it's been modified as weaponry or whatever it is, that the only way to get people to understand what the fuck is going on is by first present them the story so they have an understanding that it is real and it is happening and lay it in a way that's grounded and practical and but still moves you, and then follow up with the science and then show them that that thing you're watching in the movie can be engineered and created. So we are doing it all together. But there's a thing called a community of interest. So To the Stars is also building a portal with the Department of Defense to share information, to educate people, to put some declassified, now declassified videos of UFOs, some science, some documents, and have open forums, and have current military people talk to young adults.
So you're going to expose people to this narrative and explain to them through stories what this could be. That sets the stage. Then you start to introduce the actual real elements that actually exist.
Yep.
And then eventually what? What's the end game?
Well, the end game is to – the technology itself is like – so when you make – when you create this energy source that powers the spacecraft, it's called an over-unity machine. So it puts out more power than what's put into it. You can desalinate ocean water with it. You can get rid of atomic power so there's no more Fukushimas, you know. It can do a lot of different things, but it also will rapidly transform our entire transportation and communication network. So the end result with that is that'll get spun out into a company that's probably partners with major aerospace organizations, which with whom I'm already talking. And we partner on
that.
Let
me guess. You can't tell me who they are.
No, fuck no. I can't tell you. And we bring that out to the world. But the only way that can be brought out to the world is if the public owns it and we build it from scratch.
Why the public? Why does the public have to own it?
Because, well, I guess it could be in a way a private person, but the technology probably has an element of what they call eminent domain. So we're going to get to a certain point where certain agencies will probably knock on our door and go, what the fuck are you doing? And we're going to say, the public owns this. You can't take it from them. And they're going to say, fuck yeah, we can take it. And we're going to say, we're going to work something out. Because it's like building a nuclear bomb in your basement kind of thing. So
when you say the public owns it, like how will that be possible? How will the public own it?
You can go to our – we reserved a small amount of shares of the company that people can buy stock in the company right now. So a year ago, the
– But that's not the public. That's private. It's still private ownership, right? If people buy, the company can go public. But
it is public. So a year and a half ago, maybe 24 months ago, the SEC wanted to democratize going public with companies, just like an IPO, but not have to spend millions of dollars and do it. So they launched what's called a Regulation A direct public offering. And we had a file with the SEC. So we had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to do this. And we spent the last 6 months doing it. And our live event launched that. So you can go to...
And you did this just so that you can tell the whoever the fuck it is that will come after you that, hey, the public owns this. You can't take this.
That's one element of everything that we're doing. Yeah.
So you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to anticipate someone coming in and closing the doors, and that yet you're talking about it in advance.
You're essentially strategizing
them that you know, but you're letting them know that you know that they're going
to
come and get it.
It's going to be much harder to shut it down when the whole world has paid for it, invested in it, owns it. And so
you're trying to get people to buy things.
I'm trying. What do you mean?
You're trying to get people to buy stock.
Well, yeah, right now we're public. You can buy shares of the company. We only put up a very limited amount, though. I think we only put up five million shares or something.
So that seems like a lot of shares. How many shares are there all told?
There's like 100 million probably or something like that.
How does shares work?
Shares, like you just...
How does that work? Like say if we came up with Young Jamie Incorporated.
Yeah.
And we wanted to start selling shares.
When you file as a corporation, you can issue shares and you can sell those shares to people. And those shares have a price based on, you know, how you want to value your company, you know?
Okay. So you could have like 100 million shares of Young Jamie Incorporated?
Yep. You sure can.
Okay. And so then the government can't shut you down, bro.
Nah. Well, you guys maybe, because you say a lot of bad words.
No. Jamie doesn't. He's warming.
We do a lot at the company, right? So we're building essentially a science fiction version of Disney. Okay. So we have four film franchises, not all of them about UFOs. One is kind of this Blade Runner, all about nightmares kind of thing. One is like an old Amblin Spielberg movie.
Who's making these things?
Oh, we are.
I mean, who's writing them?
I wrote the first one. I'm directing that.
You're directing too?
I wrote this script.
Look at you, multi-talented motherfucker.
Well, look, that's where I'm going with most of this stuff, but the company, I had to get up and get going and set it up, and we bring in a CEO and all that kind of shit.
That's a bizarre formula, right? An entertainment company that's also going to...
Do aerospace and science? Yeah. The heart of it is when we do what's called confirmation, not disclosure, confirmation.
Uh-huh.
The heart of it is how do we tell stories that galvanize the human race and let them know a little bit more about what's going on, and how do we present them science so they understand that consciousness and a lot of other things are real, and how do we build a technology associated with those stories and with those science that can change the world? And that's why it's an academy.
Do they have any pickled bodies anywhere? Okay, formaldehyde?
I believe they do.
You believe they do? Nobody's ever told you that? Just a guess?
I believe they do.
You believe they do? You can't say any more than that?
I'm not going to say any more than that.
You said so much.
I know.
Weird what you can and can't say.
Well, I could tell you other shit offline, probably.
Okay, offline. I can't wait to end this podcast. I'll find out the real deal.
Don't kick me out.
I won't tell anybody.
Tell you some weird shit.
So now, what's the timeline for moving forward with all this stuff?
Okay, so in the next few weeks, we're going to be releasing the first declassified videos of these advanced aerial threat UFOs. And they are current videos that were just caught, and with audio and everything of the people tracking them. And we're going to launch the beta version of the Community of Interest, which is the partnered website that's going to be hosting all this declassified information, where we're going to be having the hardcore conversations with people that want to understand this stuff. We're going to be also doing an experiment with that piece of metal to show the world that the technology is not only real, but it's demonstrable. And the videos are very much a proof of concept. You know, it's showing you, look, it works, you know, mm-hmm. So we're going to build it. And
do you think it's going to be weird for people to take you seriously because you're a rock star? Like maybe if you were like some sort of a physicist scientist, yeah, they would listen to you more.
Well, you know, I remember when Elon came out years ago and he started SpaceX and then he started Tesla. I'm like, here's this dude saying all this ambitious shit. I didn't buy any of it.
That guy's 100 times smarter than the both of us combined, though.
He's fucking gnarly. I know, but
right.
I'm just saying.
Isn't that more believable once you hear him?
Maybe. I think he is. I mean, shit, he's badass. But look at the people. What's interesting to me is you haven't seen who are with me. Have you looked at the bios on this shit?
No.
Yeah, you got to read the bios of the people I'm with.
I didn't want to be tainted. I wanted to talk to you
first.
Well,
one of the scientific board, advisory board, is, you know, one of the guys at CIA that headed up the entire biowarfare program and the director of operations, the clandestine division.
So all these guys have found you how?
Various ways.
So they've come to you because you're like the beacon.
I did
They're
something.
Like, this is the way to go.
I did something that no one thought was possible.
What's that?
Was tying together a mechanism that can perpetually fund itself and can communicate and can innovate all with people that sit at it. See, I created a round table with engineers, scientists, high-ranking intelligence officials, and some others I can't tell you about, obviously. And in the defense world, it's called stovepiping. So when they compartmentalize a secret, they put them into these vertical categories that can't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. I created a horizontal structure where all these people in these amazing, accomplished positions in government were able to come together at the same table, and they can discuss what we want to teach the world and how we want to do that. But the way to do that is including the public and making it a public benefit corporation. And what that means is we're able to spend money, and it's in our charter, on things that can benefit the world and not just provide a return to the investors. But what we're doing happens to be extremely lucrative.
Lucrative for investors?
For investors and the company. So
how is it, like, say if young Jamie wants to be a part of it, what does he have to do?
You just go to thestarsacademy.com and you buy shares, whatever you want to buy.
But how will it be lucrative for him?
Because first of all, the technology itself is like a $1 trillion thing. If we can figure that out over the next 8 years, and they think we can, so they...
Who's they?
The engineers that are building this thing. The guy. So Steve Justice, that was head of advanced programs at the Skunk Works, we talked about that. Uh-huh. They build all of our... They are the tip of the spear for the most advanced spacecraft and aircraft that the United States national security apparatus has, period.
Okay.
Hands down. And he was the big boy there. And their model, we think we have this is a guess, but I think there's a 60% chance within 36 months or so we'll be able to demonstrate something pretty kick-ass. And as long as there's no major obstacle there, we think within 8 years we'll be able to have something. But it's expensive, and we got to work with the government, and we're going to have to work with major aerospace. For example, this one meeting I have coming up with a big name aerospace company is offering their material sciences division. We need that. We need to be able to create certain metals that can resonate in certain frequencies, shit like that. The other way that the company makes money is when we build this, the satellite launching system. That's like exactly what Elon's doing now, putting satellites in orbit, but we don't have to build rockets. We can launch them with lasers. That's a big deal. You point lasers at the bottom of a CubeSat, which is like the size of a shoebox, and you could put it into low Earth orbit, and you could put it up even higher without using any fossil fuels, with using light. That's a big deal. That's a multi-billion dollar gimmick right there.
Has this been proven?
I mean, you've seen a proof of concept? There's video.
There's video of this actually
happening?
Yeah,
it's in our launch video. If you watch the video at the top of the tothestarsacademy.com page, you'll see shots of it where little things glowing and it's getting beamed up into the sky. That's the Air Force. Yeah. My guys were on that project.
Little things glowing? Like they have mass, though? Like a satellite?
Yeah. They're called CubeSat. Do you know what a CubeSat is?
No.
A CubeSat is a modular box that you put together as modules based on what you need. Okay, I need a thruster, I need a sensor, and I need a fucking RF signal thing to send the data back home. So now you got three little boxes attached. That's a CubeSat. They call them cubes. So it's essentially, it's probably 80% of the satellite business, but now they got to put all these CubeSats together on Musk's rocket that's also launching giant satellites for DOD or whatever. But it's super expensive because you have a rocket and you have all the fossil fuels and all this stuff. If you launch these CubeSats with lasers, because they're not that heavy and you can, like I said, it would take a cost of launching a CubeSat from $50,000 a pound down to $5,000. That's a huge deal.
So there's a video of this actually happening on your – what is the – tothestarsacademy.com? Is that what it is?
And you can watch the video. And then you go to the entertainment division, which is my primary spot. Making movies and selling millions of books and licensing the stuff out is the reason why Disney's $300 billion and Warner Brothers is $5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Warner Brothers just makes movies. Disney's makes they make franchises and they're vertically integrated. We put out the book. We put out the T-shirts. We make the movie. So that's really where we're going. And we have three television series that are probably one of which will be announced probably in the next couple of weeks. The other two, we're a little further out on that. The first film, our first film, is first quarter next year. I wrote that one, and I'll be directing that one. It's called Strange Times, which is like a hard R version of The Goonies, but funny, but scary and fucked up, but with 17 and 18-year-old kids. And then Secret Machines, the motion picture. These are all franchises. So Strange Times has an animated series that's coming out. We have a wonderful writer from Saturday Night Live that's show running the thing. We have an unscripted show coming out on the entire company, just following us in a very National Geographic way as we do all these things. And as we build lasers, as we're on the movie sets, as we're in the lab, you know, pinging those pieces of metal I told you about. So there's a lot of things like that going. So when you ask about how do we monetize all this shit, we have a full functioning entertainment division. It's been up for a few years. That's what I've been doing. And that's how I made the book. And we've put out 7 novels already.
But your end goal is ultimately to expose all this information to the American people.
My end goal is not just that. My end goal is to build a company that changes the world. And by doing a traditional IPO in the next 5 to 7 years, and to do that, I grabbed very, very high-ranking people from various areas in the government to achieve all this stuff. And they don't need to come in on the movies. I have that on lock. That's my thing. But it can function as a way to help people understand what the fuck is going on. So some of the movies, some of the TV series, some of the nonfiction works that we do will all be about that subject, but the rest of it won't be.
All right, dude. Well, that's a very ambitious project. And let us know when you're ready to go to the moon or Mars or wherever the fuck you're going to go.
Uranus?
Yeah, you can go to Uranus, all those places. All
right.
And I hope it's all real. I'm excited.
Cool. Thanks,
guys. It's true. Thanks for having me. Oh, thanks for coming on, brother.
Yeah.
Appreciate
you so much.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
All right. Are we off?
Yeah.